And to the analysis of Shields and Brooks, that is syndicated columnist Mark Shields and New York Times columnist David Brooks. Gentlemen, thank you very much. So President Obama in Europe this week, Mark and David, trying to rally the allies, stiffen their spine to stand up to Russia's Vladimir Putin if that becomes necessary. But Mark, is the West united and ready to do what it takes to stand up to Russia if they need to?
I don't know, Judy. We hope that's the case, but I think we're closer to it this week than we were probably 2 weeks ago, because if anything, Putin's actions have driven the Western allies closer together. There was lingering, were lingering problems. The United States invasion, occupation of Iraq was opposed by France and Germany. There's been disagreements on sometimes on what to do in the Middle East. But there's been now the recognition of dependence and interdependence, that they have a lot more in common than they have dividing them. And I think, if anything, the allies are the allies, as we call them, the Western Europeans, are a lot closer and more united than they were, in large part because of the leadership of the leaders, including the president, but particularly because of Putin's actions.
More united, David, and strong enough to do what it takes?
Well, those are two separate questions. More united, for sure. Certainly united on our analysis of Vladimir Putin. I thought President Obama sped it very well in Brussels this week, that Putin represents really a threat to the global order, that the idea that you can change borders, the idea that you can have spheres of influence, that's just not acceptable in a post-Cold War world. And I do think the Europeans and Americans see that the same way. What we're going to do about it, there's union, but there is some division. The Europeans are obviously, for economic reasons, a lot less willing to go far on sanctions. They rely on Russia for energy. They rely on Russian oligarch money through their banking systems, real estate, schools. And so they've been a little more hesitant. Nonetheless, I think the sanctions have been pretty strong. The crucial issue going forward to me is this issue of aggression. Vladimir Putin doesn't necessarily seem to be moved by economic sanctions alone as he masses troops on the Ukrainian border. Do you actually have to have some sort of military deterrent? And nobody's talking about putting Western troops into Ukraine, but arming Ukraine, some other method of deterring Putin from actually going in and rewriting those borders.
Does the West, Mark, have the stomach, or is it prepared to do something like that?
Well, I don't think Ukraine, I don't think anybody pretends that's the case, Judy. And I think the appetite for further military engagement is pretty far diminished after Iraq and Afghanistan in particular. But I do think that the isolation of Putin, rather than humiliation, which I think is what the president has approached, has been wise. I mean, let's understand, Putin doesn't represent some international movement. It's not communism in the sense that there are outposts all over Central America following Putin. This is one man. He's the decider. He is Russia right now. And I think, to the degree that he can be isolated and made to, just as President Reagan didn't say, let's go in and take down that wall and destroy it, he said, tear down that wall. And I think that's been really the approach that President Obama has taken this week.
And maybe that phone call today, David, or late today, was a good sign. We don't know. We don't know what really came of it.
Yeah, I would just say it's not just Putin one man. I think I disagree with Mark on that one. Putin is part of a sort of a nationalist ideology. Well, the books he sent out to his regional governors really saw Russia as the crucial world power, the bridge between East and West, playing a much more enlarged role. And one of the things we've seen in Russian public opinion is Putin's stock has surged. He's become very popular in the course of this crisis. And the idea of invading Ukraine is also quite popular.
I'm not questioning his popularity in Russia or his support in Russia. What I am saying is there are not Putin outposts in Nicaragua. There are not Putin outposts in Central America and Latin America, because there's no ideology or philosophy here.
Mark, next stop for the president was Rome, where he met with Pope Francis. How important, and it was a very interesting meeting, the pictures were kind of captivating, the two of them talking. How important is it for the president to be seen, or any president, to be seen as aligned with the Roman Catholic Pope?
Well, I think this Pope has captured the imagination. Pope Francis, I mean, is 89-3 favorable among American Catholics, according to Gallup. He's 11-1 favorable among all Americans, and including among Protestants. I mean, so he is he's a world figure. He's where Barack Obama was 5 years ago, man of the year, and sort of captured the imagination, a rock star. But I think politically it's important in this country, because very bluntly, Republican leaders have been shrewdly close to Catholic bishops on particularly cultural and social issues, on abortion, on same-sex marriage. They've identified with them. And this pope has not changed the words, but he's changed the music. And he talks an awful lot more about the idolatry of money. He talks about trickle-down economics being a failure, and treating human beings as throwaways. And so he's actually, as Steve Schneck said on the broadcast last night with Gwen, he's to the left of Barack Obama. He talks about the poor. Barack Obama talks about the middle class. So I think in that sense, politically and economically, it was good for the president, and it certainly strengthens his economic argument here at home.
So, David, some of the pope's popularity can rub off on the president, or that's not the way it works?
Maybe if he converts. I don't think so. The interesting thing about these meetings for any U.S. president is the pope, and whenever pope, and this obviously is a magical pope, but any pope comes with the history of Catholic social teaching behind him so far, probably always. And that's a communal social teaching. That's a social teaching that emphasizes solidarity. On economic terms, that's going to put the church more on the left. On social terms, probably a little more on the right. There's always going to be differences with any U.S. president, just the way our politics is aligned. And I think it always has a positive effect on the president by reminding a U.S. leader, we tend to come from a more individualistic country, of a more communal philosophy. Yes. And the pope gave the president his book. Hope personally and both theologically he reads that book.
Well, two other things I want to ask you both about. One, Mark, is the healthcare law. White House celebrating yesterday. The deadline is the end of March. They're celebrating. They have 6 million Americans have now signed up. Is this something? We know the law is still very unpopular, largely unpopular with the American people. Does this, though, in some way take the edge off of the negative that the Republicans have made this as an issue?
Well, it's the old better than expected, Judy. I mean, that's where it is. I mean, there was 7 million was the target group. Now it's 6 million, and the Democrats are doing a little victory dance in the end zone over that. It's certainly far better than it was, and you can see that there's been an all-out effort made. I do think the Republicans, quite honestly, have promised to come up with one that will cover everybody at a lower cost and at no intrusion. We're still waiting for that. It hasn't happened, but it has been an abject failure on the part of the Democratic administration to sell this plan. It was 36% approval 4 years ago in the CBS poll, 39% approval 2 years ago, and 41% approval. It's a failure to convince people, persuade people, that they're right and the other side's wrong.
David?
Yeah, well, I think the plan has achieved credibility. There was some possibility. I never thought it was a large possibility. There was some possibility that people wouldn't sign up and the whole thing would collapse just by lack of effort. It's crossed that threshold. So it's going to function. The question is whether it will function well or poorly, whether the exchanges will work, whether the cost things will work, whether innovation will be driven by this. And then we're simply too soon to tell. It'll take 2 or 3 years to even begin to get some sign of that. What we have now is people really reacting to it individually. A lot of people are pleased. They're getting insurance mm-hmm. at lower cost. A lot of people are displeased. They're seeing their premiums go up. I suspect over the next 6 months, 7 months, a lot of those individual experiences will begin to replace the more ideological reaction which people have to the bill now. I suspect it'll still be a pretty good issue, at least this election, for Republicans.
Well, one issue people are paying attention to today, Mark, is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. An internal report has essentially exonerated him of any role in this bridge closing political, what's become a political disaster for him. Does this report in any way mitigate the political damage that he's taken, the hit he's taken?
Bulletin. Governor Christie's lawyers find Governor Christie innocent. As I understand, there are three investigations being conducted at taxpayers' expense. This is the first one, $1 million to a firm that has represented the governor. So it's not exactly Archie Cox or Henry Jaworski coming in, or Leon Jaworski, rather, coming in at
Watergate
the time
of fame.
Watergate fame and independent counsel or a star chamber. They interviewed everybody except the three people that the governor continually throws under every available bus, Bridget Kelly and Mr. Wildstein and Bill Stepien. So I think that there's a lot of questions. We still have the U.S. attorney investigating, and we still have the legislature investigating. The governor wants to declare himself innocent. He's free to do that. I just think what you've seen, Judy, you've seen him go from 41 to 12 favor, 41% favorable, 12% unfavorable in the Wall Street Journal poll to 17% favorable, 32% unfavorable. That's a 44-point swing. He's trailing Hillary Clinton by double digits in his home state. I just think that this has been a real blow to him, and he just can't whitewash it himself.
And he told Diane Sawyer at ABC, David, that he's still very much thinking about running for president. At least he didn't rule it out.
Right. You know, I guess I agree with Mark. It is an internal investigation. But I do think one thing we can say is less likely, which is that there'll be some smoking gun email that will surface. I assume this firm, and it's run by reputable people, Randy Mastro and other people are reputable people. I assume they did not bury some sort of smoking gun email that they found among all their document searches. So he may still have to face the testimony of these three people, the testimony of people that he did know what was going on. But there's no, at least so far, no hard evidence that he knew what was going on with the lane closure. So that, I think, is real good news for him. As for the political prospects, I'm struck by two things. The first is I've seen him talking to Republican donor groups, and they are not interested. They want to talk about the national issues. The long-term problem, which is the one Mark referred to, is the popularity. I think he has a little possibility, using the money he's going to be getting, to build back some long-term possibility, but he's obviously hurt.
David Brooks, Mark Shields, we thank you.